Good morning. Thanks so much for joining us online today for our worship experience. And so glad that you've taken time out of your Sunday morning to be a part of what we're doing today. I know it's a crazy world, but you know, I was thinking back that just a few weeks ago in a sermon series that we did called We Are Ashworth, several weeks in a row, I talked about how when we describe the church, when we define the church, it's not this building that I'm standing in almost alone today. The church is you. And even though we have distance between us, we can't physically be here together, we can be together here, online together. And that is what the church is all about, continuing to be the church, not just in this facility when we can be here, but right now around your kitchen table, in your living room, wherever you may be, you are the church. And you know what? Even though we're not physically together, take advantage of this streaming experience because you have a chat window here on the side that you can type into. You can interact with others from Ashworth, the Ashworth family. If you need a prayer, you can click the prayer link at the top and let us know, and our prayer team will be praying for you even today. Just remember that that we're very fortunate to have the technology to be able to do this, but not only to do this, but we have the technology that allows us to continue to go forward even after this service today, to check on one another, to encourage one another, to just be there for one another, continue to be the church, whether or not we get to come back to this building anytime soon or not. I know many of you are already doing it. Thank you for that. Keep up the great work. You know, in this crazy world that we're in right now, where it just seems like everything is upside down, it can be a real challenge to know who to trust, where to get your information, what information is going to be accurate. And as I thought about that, I think back to the last election, the election of 2016. As a part of that election, there seems to have been a term that kind of rose to the forefront to describe that entire process. It was used when politicians didn't want to answer the questions, they wanted to divert attention, or they just wanted to say that, hey, somebody's making something up. And of course, that term I'm talking about is fake news. And fake news is nothing more. It can be as innocent as just inaccurate reporting. Maybe a journalist didn't quite do all their homework. But it can go even further than that because it can actually be the deliberate dissemination of disinformation, you know, just out and out lies in order to throw people off the track. And, you know, we see now that because of social media and things like Facebook and Twitter, Snapchat and Instagram, that any type of story that gets tossed out there, any type of disinformation or whatever, it just spreads like wildfire. People grab onto it and they post it and they share it and it goes, it runs wild. You know, and to be honest though, this isn't really anything new. Fake news has been around for a long time. In fact, I was listening to a podcast recently and it was going back to look at all the presidential elections from the very beginning, beginning with George Washington. And they were talking about how even in early American politics, that if you had were running for president and you had some friends that wanted to support you, it was possible that they may go start a newspaper. And in that newspaper's whole intention was to put out bad information about your opponent to help you get elected. And I even remember reading about the election of 1828, where it talked about Andrew Jackson. And some of the fake news coming out at that point about him was that they were calling his mother a prostitute. They were saying that she was married to a biracial man, which back in 1828 would have been a horrendous scandal. And they were saying that that man was actually Jackson's father. And what's crazy is that none of this was true. But if you read more of the story, you understand that all the stress surrounding that fake news actually contributed to the death of Andrew Jackson's wife. It's a really sad story. And even today, you only have to open Facebook, and if you begin to go down your news feed, you see all this information being floated around out there about COVID-19. You know, and you see things like, you know, that people have gotten the virus from taking ibuprofen. That's just simply not true. You read that, you know what, this was an orchestrated thing by China. It's a bioweapon that they developed. There's no facts to support that. There's this belief out there that if you stockpile enough toilet paper, it will keep you safe from the coronavirus. And evidently, many of you continue to believe that because you still can't find toilet paper in any store. It's fascinating. And you know what? What amazes me even more about this moment is that depending on what political side of the aisle you are on will make a real difference in what you choose to believe. Where some side says, this is a real thing, you need to hunker down, you need to go to the extreme and not go outside, and it's going to be this way for 18 months. And then there's another side that says, it'll pass. It's not really that big of a threat. Don't worry about it. Go and do it. Go about your business. Our political ideology feeds into the news that we want to believe. And we find that this fake news just continues to get propagated out into the world. With all the fake news that's out there, though, it really began to make me wonder that we as Christians, as we have a message that we want the world to know, we believe it's the greatest news ever, the news of Jesus Christ. I wonder, though, if sometimes as people listen to us and they see us, do they listen to the message that we're saying, and do they immediately kind of mark it off and put us into that whole fake news category? You know, even looking at things pastors have said over the last week, it's kind of crazy. One pastor was talking about how the coronavirus is the 11th plague. No, it's not. You know, there was another pastor in New Zealand that was saying, you know, don't worry, if you're a born-again Christian, you can't catch the virus. Just simply not true. That's just not true. But you know, the message of Jesus is the most important message that we believe that the world needs to hear. The Bible even talks about it as being called good news. But is it really good news? Is it really good news? Is the message of Jesus to those we're trying to share it with, do they see it as good news? Or do they listen to us talk about it and just turn around, walk away and go, more fake news? You know, I think sometimes what makes the message of Jesus seem fake is how we present it. It's how we present it to people. And it begins with maybe our own awkwardness. You know, sometimes trying to have a spiritual conversation with people can be incredibly intimidating. It's kind of like talking to your kids about the birds and the bees. You know you should do it. You know you need to do it, but you really don't want to do it because it's uncomfortable. It's awkward. And sometimes sharing Jesus can be that same way. And so we begin to find out what is the pre-program, the canned responses, the canned list of things I need to tell them, and let's get this over with and move on. And so instead of being a natural conversation that flows from relationship, we look for systems and processes that will help us get through telling people about Jesus. And then not only that, sometimes we get in our minds that, well, when I get to the end of telling them, they have to make a decision. They have to sign on that line right then. And so it puts that pressure on us. And then sometimes I think we look at it, and what makes it awkward is we go, well, what if they reject it? What if they reject the message that's rejecting me? And our fear of rejection moves us to a place of awkwardness and inactivity. So what we do to make it easier is we begin to memorize things. We memorize facts and figures. We create strategies and programs and systems that we think will help us engage with people. And then when we encounter them, we run them through this pre-programmed package of questions and responses like any good telemarketer would do, hoping that in the end they'll buy our product, and our product is really just nothing more than Jesus. And sometimes I wonder, though, if we look at others and we think, oh, well, everybody's already heard this message. They couldn't possibly be interested in this. And so we think the message has become irrelevant because when we share it, they don't seem interested. But I wonder if what's become really irrelevant is not the message of Jesus, but maybe the way we're trying to present Jesus, maybe the way we're going about telling them, and maybe it's our presentation sometimes that has gotten it to be more fake news and presented it more as fake news than good news. You know, in the Gospel of Luke chapter 4, we find that Jesus is going to begin his ministry. He's about to step out into the world. You start with Luke 1 and 2, and you read the birth narrative of Jesus coming to earth. In chapter 3, you read about his baptism. In chapter 4, he goes off into the wilderness where he's tempted for 40 days, and you have just this entire preparation taking place. And then in the last part of chapter 4, you find that Jesus goes home. He goes back to Nazareth, where he's from. And that day, we read that because there was no coronavirus there, they were able to go to the synagogue and meet and have their services that day. And we get a picture. We get to kind of glance into one of the services that Jesus was a part of that day. And so as a part of their services in the synagogue, there were several things that they did. So one of the things they did was they recited the Shema, which is from Deuteronomy chapter 6. Maybe you've heard this before. It's that part of the Bible that goes, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul," all that. You know, that's, they started by reciting that together. They would pray together. Then someone would turn and go to the Torah, the first five books of the Old Testament. Someone would read from the law. And then another person would come and they would get one of the prophets and they would take the scroll and they would read from the prophets. And then they would expound a little bit on what this would mean. And then they would close their time together with a benediction. And in Luke chapter 4, we pick up this story where Jesus has gone to the synagogue to be a part of that service that day. And I want us to read what he did and what he said that day to see how that may be able to help us move beyond seeing the gospel or helping our friends and neighbors see the gospel as not just fake news, but actually really, truly good news. So Luke chapter 4, we're going to start reading in verse 16. Here's what it says. It says, he, Jesus, went to Nazareth where he had been brought up. And on the Sabbath day, he went into the synagogue as was his custom. This was something he did. He stood up to read. And the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. Unrolling it, he found the place where it is written. And he's quoting Isaiah here. He says, the Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. Then he rolled up the scroll, he gave it back to the attendant, and he sat down. The eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him, and he began by saying to them, today this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing. What a fascinating story. You know, as one of the first official things he does before he sets out on his ministry is he begins to communicate to the people exactly who he is and why he's here. And as you look at this passage, it really gives us kind of a mission statement of Jesus, of what he's going to accomplish while he's here. And in this moment, as he's in the synagogue, as he's handed this scroll of Isaiah, the people would have been familiar with this passage. You see, because Isaiah, in several passages, points to a messianic figure, a prophet that was to come that would bring divine salvation to the people. And so as Jesus would have begun reading this, they would have understood, oh yeah, we're looking forward to that day. We want that day to come. And as Jesus reads this, and then he sits down, and as he begins his exposition, a part of that exposition to them is he says, and today this has been fulfilled. He says to the crowd there, the moment that you've been waiting for has arrived. And in this moment, Jesus would begin to try to communicate to a very skeptical world, a world where many would see him do miraculous things but still not believe. But he would show that his arrival wasn't some fake news event. It was actually good news. As Jesus quoted from the prophet Isaiah, he does so and he points out that what was foretold hundreds of years ago is now being written about him, that he is the fulfillment and his arrival is kicking off something new, something that they had been anticipating and wanting to see come about. But as Jesus is reading Isaiah, Isaiah lists out three action things that are a part of the coming of this individual, of the Messiah. And Jesus talks about them, and he points them out. As he begins, and he begins with this one, it says, as he quotes Isaiah, he says, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me. Now, Jesus, this point right here just fascinates me because we know that Jesus is the second person of the Trinity. He's the Son of God. He came from heaven. He's God in human flesh, and he's come. And as he reads this, he's giving credence and credibility to what the prophet Isaiah has said, and he's claiming this message as his own, and he begins by saying, the Spirit of the Lord is on me. And in doing so, he's reminding them that he is not going to do this in his own power, that what he's going to do is going to be something that's empowered by the Spirit of God. When you go back just one chapter and you read about the baptism of Jesus, you read that he went into the water with John the Baptist, and as he's taken into the water and as he's brought back up, the heavens open up and the Spirit of God descends on him like a dove. And it's this idea, it's this picture of the empowering. What Jesus is talking about here in chapter 4 has already taken place. And it's an acknowledgement that Jesus is not going to attempt this task, this mission on his own. He's going to be empowered by the Spirit. You see, the empowering of the Spirit of God is a crucial part of the gospel. It was crucial for the Apostle Paul because when you read over in Acts, you'll see that there were times that the Apostle Paul would go places because the Spirit of God led him, and he would not go places because the Spirit of God would tell him not to. The Spirit of God leads us. And you know, while sometimes we try to come up with systems and diagrams to be able to help us share the message of Jesus, I can't help but wonder if we sometimes rely on those systems and diagrams more than we're relying on the Spirit. Have we replaced the Spirit with a system? And that will always get us into trouble. We must be filled with and rely on the Holy Spirit of God first and foremost. Jesus did. And if it was important for Jesus, how much more important would it be for us? You know, the next action we see that Jesus is talking about, the first is the Spirit of the Lord is on me. And then the next one he says is that he is sent, that he has been sent by God. He has been sent. And what's interesting is this begins right here in Nazareth, in his hometown. You know, and sometimes when we talk about being sent, we often think of missionaries and we think, well, okay, I'll have to sell everything I have. I have to move halfway across the world. And you know, sometimes people are called to that, and praise God they are. And you know, people halfway around the world are being called now to come here to the United States, which is great because it means the message of Jesus is getting out there and going farther. But the message here is Jesus understood that he was sent. He was sent to this region, to this area, and he was going to travel around, and he was going to tell everybody about what he'd come to do. We are all sent. Being sent is a part of following Jesus. Just as Jesus was sent, so we are sent. We're sent to our homes, our neighborhoods, our communities, our workplaces. These are all places that we've been told that we can go, and we can start talking to others about Jesus. You know, one of the things I think we kind of believe at times is that this empowering of the Spirit, it may happen to us at various times in our lives. We feel it at different times in our lives, but sometimes I think we can be very selfish with that. We have a special moment in worship. We have a special moment in prayer, and we kind of keep that to ourselves, but we need to understand that the empowering of the Spirit is not for our own benefit. We are not empowered. We are not gifted by the Spirit for ourselves, but for the benefit of others, so that others have the opportunity to hear about Jesus. And so the Spirit of the Lord was upon him and he was sent. And then the third action that we see here is that Jesus was called and he was sent to proclaim. And he says that three different times. He's there to proclaim. You know, there's an expression that's very famous. It goes around a lot and it's accredited to St. Francis of Assisi. And we say that he said, you know, share the gospel at all times and when necessary, use words. You know, there's a couple of problems with this statement. Number one, we don't have any record that St. Francis actually ever said this. But number two, it's wrong. We have a message that has to be shared, but it has to be spoken too. You know, going out, and especially right now, we need to be engaged in our communities. We don't need to let fear override us. We need to be safe, yes, but we need to move into our neighborhoods and our communities to figure out how we can best serve those around us. But if all we do is serve without ever giving people the reason why behind it, we've really not done exactly everything we've needed to do. There's a message that needs to be spoken. People need to understand the heart, the why, the motivation that gets us there to do the things that we're doing. They need to understand and hear about the message of Jesus. So you have these three actions. The Spirit of the Lord is upon him. He is sent and he's proclaiming. But then there are three things that he's actually proclaiming as a part of this message, and I think that's good for us to look at, to remember as we talk about the message of Jesus. The first thing that he is proclaiming is he says, I'm proclaiming good news to the poor. Now, what would be good news to the poor? Think about that for just a moment. What would be good news to the poor? Well, would it be that they're all going to get a big fat check? Well, if the government has their way, we may all be getting that very soon. Yay, who doesn't want an extra $1,000, right? But what happens when the money runs out? What happens when we spent that money, we've got that nice new television, or we've paid down some debt, and the bank account is back to zero? What happens when that check is gone? Is Jesus here in this moment talking just about those who are financially poor? Or is there a greater context here? Well, as we go through each of these proclamations, what you need to understand is that he is talking first and foremost about the physical aspect. There are people around that are poor. They are socially and financially and economically poor. And you know what? Jesus is saying to them in this moment that this is good news for you. Why would it be good news? Because the poor were outcasts. The poor were the people that were looked down upon. And by saying this, by owning this message, Jesus is saying, you're going to be risen up. You're going to be raised up to the same level as everybody else. You're no longer going to be despised and looked down upon. You're going to be elevated. That's the good news that's coming to you. But beyond just the socially and economically poor, Jesus is talking about those who are also spiritually poor. He's talking about those who feel spiritually bankrupt, those who feel like complete failures before God, those who feel like they could never do anything good enough or ever do or be right enough or righteous enough to be accepted by God. And Jesus in this moment is looking at those people and he's telling them, he says, you don't have to try harder to be good enough to reach me because I have come to you. Let me say that again. He's telling them that you don't have to reach me. I have come to you. If that's not good news, what is? God has come to us. The second thing Jesus talks about has kind of two parts, and it begins with this, and he says, I've come to proclaim freedom for the prisoner and the oppressed. And just like I said, it's got the physical aspect where, yes, there were prisoners and oppressed people. There's a spiritual side to this as well. To the original audience, when Isaiah would have written this, when they heard about prisoners and being oppressed, they would have thought about being in exile. When the nations came in, Babylon came in and took them into exile, took them as slaves, basically. They would have remembered that. They would have thought of that. And so this idea of finding freedom, the idea of being able to return home to your homeland, to establish your own place again and be free, that would have been such an energizing thought. But beyond that, there is the spiritual dimension that Jesus is talking about here, because he's talking about those who feel enslaved to fear, those who feel enslaved to anxiety, to addictions, to greed, to approval. There's so much in our lives around us that can make us become a captive to it. And Jesus is saying right here is, I've come to open the doors wide, to release the chains off you so that you can experience freedom, that release from the power of sin. And he says, I'm offering to you forgiveness and liberation. And not only is he talking about freedom for the oppressed and the prisoner, but he goes on in this second proclamation to talk about recovery of the sight of the blind. And if you keep reading Luke, you understand, you'll see that many times Jesus is engaging people. He's engaging people with the miraculous healings that he does. And even in one moment, he takes mud and puts it in a blind guy's eyes, and the guy is able to see. But it doesn't end there for that guy, because even then, Jesus forgives his sin and brings to that individual salvation. You know, Jesus still does the miraculous today. There are healings that take place today occasionally. But is the greatest need in our lives sometimes the physical healing that we're reaching out for? You see, what we find in Jesus is that Jesus has come to bring light into the darkness. Have you ever taken a tour of a cave? And you know, the tour guides take you down into the cave and you get kind of down away from all the entrances and the openings, and you're in kind of this one area, and they say, okay, everybody be still. We're going to turn the lights off so you can experience complete and total darkness. And you sit there, and everybody's still, and they turn the lights off. And then as you're there, you think to yourself, you think, okay, my eyes are going to adjust, and then I will be able to see something. But even though you're there for minutes and minutes, and your eyes do adjust, you can still hold your hand up in front of your face, and you're never really able to see that. You see, that's the darkness that we're talking about was a part of this world. And Jesus is the light that comes in to pierce the darkness. When we can't see our hand in front of our face, Jesus comes to bring light so that we can see. What does he help us see? He helps us to see our condition. He helps us to see our helplessness. He helps us to see our need for him. But most importantly, he helps us see his love for us. Oh, that's amazing. We are able to see his love for us. There's one more proclamation here, and it's easy for us to miss this one because we don't really sometimes understand all the Jewish festivals and feasts and the calendar that they had. But in the final thing, he says, he's here to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. And if you were to hear that, what you would immediately be taken to is the idea of what was known as the year of Jubilee. The year of Jubilee, which basically was every 7 years in the Jewish people, basically there was a reset. If land had been sold from one family to the other, this was the time where that land would go back to the original owner. Debts were forgiven. Basically, this year of the Lord's favor is a reset. It's a fresh start. It's a time to begin again. And Jesus is saying that that fresh start that was every 7 years, your fresh start, he's saying that can begin right now and it will begin today. You see, these proclamations are announcements that Jesus is making. He's bringing the words of Isaiah forward. But they're not just an announcement because it's also an invitation. You see, God has come near. Jesus has taken the step to come into our world as one of us, not just to point the way to God, but to be God for us and say to us, I am the way. To come to us and to be the answer for us, for our poverty, our blindness, our oppression, for our fresh start that we so desperately need. You see, what makes the gospel actually good news is that it's not a one-size-fits-all presentation, even though sometimes I think we try to do that, and that's what gets us into trouble. That's what makes it seem so fake, is that people think, oh, well, this is just one-size-fits-all, but it's really not. And Jesus is saying why it's not, because it's for the poor, it's for the blind, it's for the oppressed, it's for those that need a fresh start. Jesus met people at the point of their need. Jesus always was able to take his message and bring it to people where they actually were. When he met that blind man that he healed physically, as I said, he also said to him, but now let me give you something greater, which is the forgiveness of sin. In John chapter 4, we see that Jesus goes to a well and he's interacting with a woman at that well. And that woman is just there to draw water for the day. And Jesus begins talking to her about water and then is able to say, but you know what? Have you ever wanted living water? Have you ever thought that there's water that where you won't thirst again? And he uses that as an opportunity to point the way back to him, to share with her the good news. You go to Acts and you read that Paul, wherever he went, his approach changed a little bit wherever he was so that the people could understand how the message of Jesus, how that good news wasn't fake, but it actually could make a real tangible difference in their lives. Paul made the statement, he said, to the Jew, I'm a Jew, to the Greek, I'm a Greek. I will become all things to all people so that I might have the opportunity to win some for Jesus. We need to shed that fake news, one-size-fits-all presentation and realize that the actual good news of Jesus says that Jesus can meet people where they are. He can intersect people at the point of need in their life. You know, what's fascinating about this Isaiah passage to me is that if you actually go back to Isaiah, you see that around what Jesus quoted is a part in Isaiah where the next section talks about vengeance upon evildoers. And Jesus doesn't read that part. He doesn't talk about God coming to take vengeance on evildoers. Why? Because that wasn't what his mission was about. Jesus didn't come to bring punishment on the world. He came to bring God's love and his mercy to them. You know, the message of Jesus is the best news that we could ever share with someone. But it's only good news for them if we know them, if we listen to them, if we understand. If we try to force everybody into this one size, well, let me tell you this, we're going to fail miserably. And we're going to lose people because they're going to hear it as nothing more than fake news. But if we can help them to see, just as Jesus did here in this moment, where the good news, where the message of Jesus can intersect their lives, they will see that it is the best news that they could ever hope to hear. You see, sharing our faith is an expression of love. Not sharing a presentation, not sharing a diagram, but sharing Jesus is an expression of love. We get the opportunity to share with people how you can have peace when the world is falling apart. You have the ability to share that and bring life to someone. You know, you can relate your own fears, your own anxiety, and how your relationship with Jesus is getting you through these tense moments. You have that opportunity, and you can share with them how it doesn't mean the storm immediately stops, but it shows that Jesus can carry us through the storm. How might that be life-giving to somebody who is suffering through with crippling anxiety right now? You know, as people are trying to make sense of what's going on in the world, it's an opportunity for us to speak with them. But not in this post on Facebook, hey, just trust Jesus, everything will be okay. That's garbage. That's the fake news I'm talking about. We've got to be authentic in our faith. We've got to meet people at the point of their need. We've got to lean in into these relationships to actually care and know and throw aside those diagrams and systems to just really, truly, genuinely doing what Jesus did, which is loving people. And we have the opportunity to tell people so much, like they're not an accident, that this isn't random, that there's meaning and purpose in life, that meaning isn't found in impersonal religious rituals, but it's found in an intimate relationship with Jesus Christ that also brings us into an incredible community with others. Let us use this time, when there's so much chaos and confusion around the world, to show why the message of Jesus isn't fake news, but it's actually good news.